here. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, keeping up our friendships can be hard, and in a pandemic, even harder. We'll get advice from the author of a new book about friendship in a time of loneliness. First, the Marathon County Board last week voted against a resolution that would have declared the area a community for all and committed the board to reflecting inclusion and equity in local government. The resolution was first brought up almost a year ago in the wake of George Floyd's death. It became the subject of debate and national news coverage along the way. Following the vote, Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg issued her own declaration saying that the largest city in Marathon County would be a community for all. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you live in Marathon County, have you been paying attention to this resolution? What do you think about the debate and the outcome we've seen? And wherever you are, do you think there's more your area could do to be more welcoming to people from different backgrounds? And what's your experience been like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rob Metzer is WPR's rural communities reporter based in Wausau. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
There's been a lot of different representations about what this resolution said and did. Can you sort out some of the truth? What was there and what wasn't there, Rob?
Sure. I mean, this is by design, a broad and somewhat inoffensive statement embracing diversity. That is what this Community for All resolution was to do. It didn't come with any sort of actions. It didn't take anything away from anyone in Marathon County, but it did say that that diversity is good and something to be embraced in the community. And it's this follows the Marathon County's strategic vision, which states that as well. But it was something that came in the wake of George Floyd's murder and in the broader social justice movement. So it was advanced as part of that sort of social justice activism. But the content of the resolution was quite broad and intentionally avoided any sort of hot button issue.
And this has been a year in the making. What has been the pushback from both board members and members of the public in Marathon County?
Right. So, the conservative members of the community and the Marathon County Board, in my view, correctly understood, perceived this as something that was like connected to the Black Lives Matter movement and the social justice protest that we saw last year in Wausau as well as in across the nation. And so because that connection existed, they seized on it and it became a sort of culture war subject. So that caused them, caused folks to completely blow up and exaggerate what was contained in the resolution, and also to really see it as like a thing that they wanted to stand against. So we had the chairman of the local Republican Party speaking against it at public meetings. We had people showing up to county board meetings to like participate in public comment and speak about how passage of this would lead to Marxism or whatever. And so that's sort of how then before we knew it, this had become this sort of hot culture war issue.
In just a few moments, we'll hear from a supervisor on the board and the mayor of Wausau who issued a similar proclamation, in effect, only applying to Wausau. But at the county level, Rob, is this resolution or something like it just done for now? Or is there further talk about trying to water it down more and try to pass something again?
Sure. The advocates have said that they intend to continue to push for this resolution in some form. Supervisor William Harris, who is the first African-American elected leader in Marathon County, who's a county board member, said he wants to see a vote on this. So whether that means in its current form or to be brought back in a different form is not clear yet. It is worth saying it hasn't been brought to a vote of the full Marathon County Board. It was voted down at the executive committee, and it seems very, very clear that it would have been defeated if it had gone to a full vote of the county board. But like that hasn't happened yet, and there are people who say they want to see that vote happen.
Rob, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Rob Mentzer is WPR's rural communities reporter. He's based in Wausau. We're talking about the Community for All resolution voted down by, as you heard, the Executive Committee of the Marathon County Board, followed up by a similar declaration from the Wausau Mayor's Office last week. Now we'll hear from two local officials at the city and county level who supported that resolution. Yi Lang Zhang is a supervisor on the Marathon County Board representing the county's 19th district. He's also chair of the Marathon County Diversity Commission and director of the Hmong American Center. Supervisor Zhang, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. I am pleased and honored to have been invited to this discussion. So thank you.
And Katie Rosenberg is the mayor of Wausau. Mayor Rosenberg, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi there. Thank you for having me today.
Supervisor Zhang, let's start with you. This county-level resolution first got in the works almost a year ago, went through some redrafts and debate from the start. Did you expect it to be met with resistance and turn into this long-running heated debate?
The short answer is no, but the long answer is that throughout this whole to elaborate on that discussion we never thought that we would see this much opposition from the community in regards to a resolution that was meant to be a good and peaceful resolution that's basically declaring Marathon County originally as no place for hate. You know, trying to make sure that all of us are able to be to have some sort of mutual respect for one another. So no, we were not expecting this resolution to receive this much opposition.
And Mayor Rosenberg, your reaction to this being voted down in the committee, you did a mayoral executive resolution. Why did you respond?
I thought it was really important that that we respond to the New York Times article and the vision of our community that internationally was seen. So, I mean, that was really important. I know that the people here are good people, and they want a voice. And, you know, that those six people who got to vote on the resolution don't speak for everyone here. So I thought it was really important that we did hear from other people.
Supervisor Zhang, I think some of the opposition from this, from what I've read, people saying they felt in some ways attacked, that the resolution was implying that a substantial portion of the Marathon County, the white proportion of Marathon County was racist. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I've said it time and time again that this resolution here was not meant to call anybody racist or any specific individual racist. It was meant to point out the disparities in our community here and meant as a starting point for us to address those disparities. You can't start fixing problems and these type of conditions or what needs to be fixed until we acknowledge that these disparities do exist. Now, just because these disparities exist, it doesn't mean that the great people of Marathon County here are racist. You know, it just means that we need to continue looking at our system, at our policies, and our community here, and do what we can here to make it a wonderful community to live in.
And Mayor Rosenberg, I've heard people raise economic concerns that if that image, as you were saying, that came out in the Times article, if that's what people believe about Wausau and Marathon County, it's going to discourage potentially individuals, maybe even businesses, from moving to the community. Can you talk about those concerns?
Yeah, I have big concerns. Our future, it's critical to our future business needs that we continue to be a welcoming community. We need people to show up here and work here. We want people to start their families here. We want people to end their careers here. We want more people. We need to grow as a city. You know, 7 out of the last 8 years, we've lost population. So it's just critical that we know how to connect with folks and we make them feel welcome. You know, it's not just about having this moral compass, which I think it is a moral imperative here that we accept everyone, but it is also a business issue and a growth issue for Wausau.
Last week, a member of the Marathon County Board, William Harris, talked to Marissa Wojcik for Noon Wednesday on PBS Wisconsin. He talked about keeping in mind who we're debating with. Here's a listen.
We're local government. We're your neighbors. We're your friends, you know, family. We got into local government because we just wanted to see our community do better. We're not Washington. We're Wausau, Washington, D.C. We're Wausau. So I try to remind people of that.
And Supervisor Zhang, it seems like the debate has gotten less than neighborly. Do you see ways to, rebuild some of the bridges that people may not believe are there in the first place?
Yes, I definitely think that what the first step is that we need to start listening to one another rather than listening to respond, but rather listening to understand, being able to talk to each other, not at each other as well. And we, you know, and I can commit that the Diversity Affairs Commission is going to do whatever we can here to also listen to the concerns of the other individuals. And I've always held an open door policy and have always allowed other supervisors and community members to call me. And I've always enjoyed having those discussions with them, because after we finish those discussions, we seem to have a lot of common grounds. And I think that's what needs to happen. And it's still a possibility. That's what's beautiful about Marathon County, is the fact that we, you know, despite the deep divides or lines that divide us, we've been able to continuously communicate, talk, and overcome obstacles and disparities.
We're talking to Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg and Marathon County Board Supervisor Yilang Zhang about the Community for All resolution recently voted down by a committee of the county board. Man, what's next? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in Marathon County yourself? Have you been following this resolution and the debate that surrounded it? What do you think about the outcome and the follow-up executive resolution from the Wausau mayor? Wherever you live, what do you think of issues like these? How can we overcome divisions like the ones we're talking about today? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg and County Supervisor Yilang Zhang, looking at a resolution that fell short in a committee at the county board declaring Marathon County a community for all, and a follow-up executive order from the Wausau mayor saying, well, at least Wausau is a community for all. You could join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. If you're following this debate, if you're in Marathon County, if you have thoughts on these issues, call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hello.
Hello. I am a white woman. I am 89 years old, but I grew up in Wausau and lived there until I was about 20. My brother-in-law eventually joined the Wausau Police Force when a factory he worked in closed down. And almost at the beginning, I would hear him say often, if they ever hire a black person, we've all agreed we'll quit the police force. And until I stopped going up to Wausau because I no longer had any relatives there, every time I went, he was still saying the same thing, often using the N-word. Wausau is a very bigoted city. It simply is. I don't know if it's because of its somewhat isolation. I don't know. And his saying that always shocked me and shocks me to this day. I never heard him say that there was anybody interested in actually learning to know about black people and their culture, and total lack of recognition of what their valuable attributes might be to the city.
Nancy, thanks for that call. Mayor Rosenberg, what would you say to someone who grew up in your city and left and doesn't sound like she has regrets about leaving?
Well, first of all, I think that's a shocking comment. And if we ever heard a comment like that from an officer in our police department, I know that the chief would absolutely find that unacceptable and address it immediately. You know, we do have officers who are have different backgrounds, people who are black, people who are Hmong, people who are Hispanic. You know, we celebrate that within our city government, no matter where you are. So I would say that's not the current view of city government or policing here. We make an effort here. And I guess I would say, you know, we are just like anywhere else. You know, we're growing, we're learning. Maybe it's slow. I do think that we have seen progress here. We've seen it in our government bodies. We've seen it in our business world. You know, we have a lot of people coming in. You know, we've got great businesses around here who are making great strides in diversity. And I think that's the other thing that was so important about this proclamation and this discussion, is that government doesn't get to tell you how to be welcoming. We can try and be that beacon. But I also called on businesses religious institutions, nonprofits, we all need to be there for each other and be a welcoming community. And if that was my brother saying that stuff to me, I can tell you we'd have a fight.
Thanks for the call. Nancy at 800-642-1234. Supervisor Zhang, Wausau has one of the largest Hmong populations of any area in the country, I think. Kind of switching hats from a county board hat to the Hmong American Center director hat. What are you hearing from members of the Hmong community about what's going on with this resolution?
Sure, definitely. So obviously, I'm one of the biggest cheerleaders for the city of Wausau Marathon County, specifically in the Hmong community. And I have definitely seen immediate consequences already. I've seen individuals who have expressed concerns and has decided that they're going to direct their business elsewhere. I've seen individuals who are reluctant to move back to the community here. And it takes a lot of persuading, a lot of, vouching for, a lot of defending in order for us to be able to get individuals to even consider now. So, without a doubt, we've definitely seen the impact. Even the fact that the Hmong American Center is the host of the Hmong Wausau Festival, we definitely heard and seen from individuals that, from members of the Hmong community, that with the rise in anti-Asian hate crimes, they are looking for validation and confirmation from our local community here that their safety is going to be top priority and their well-being is going to be taken care of. So, without a doubt, I have definitely seen feedback and consequences as a result of this discussion or what's happening or because of the actions.
Let's go to another caller now. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My wife and I both grew up in Wisconsin, but then spent about 25 years outside of Wisconsin, and we wanted to come back home, and we did that about 8 years ago. But we've both been really saddened and surprised at how regressive Wisconsin is and is becoming. It's really sad to see. I thought Wisconsin was more progressive state, but it's really not. And it's kind of stupid too, because in today's economy, businesses are not going to thrive by taking these regressive, racist views. I just wanted to say it's just sad the way Wisconsin is headed, and that's all I had to say.
John, thanks for the call. Mayor Rosenberg, your thoughts on John's general point there, and also your thoughts on how the business community is reacting to some of these issues.
Well, let me answer the business community first. I've heard from tons of businesses already, and they thanked me for my stance on this. They think it's critical for their recruitment that we are an inclusive place, and we take that bold – it's not even a bold stance, but it is apparently a bold stance some days. And I would say this about being sad about the state of Wisconsin. You know, I think we're probably dealing with the ebb and flow here. We're working through some stuff here. You know, we're working through some stuff in the legislature. We're working through some stuff locally in local government, you know, Congress. We're all kind of having these debates where we're yelling at each other, and we do need to sit down and talk to each other. We need to lay out the rules of engagement. But I think ultimately we just have to say to each other, okay, I value you and I care about you, and this is why I need you here to help us be better.
Thanks for the call, John. We're talking to Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg and Yi Lang Zhang, Marathon County Board Supervisor, talking about a Community for All resolution that didn't make it through in the Marathon County Board. Back to your calls now. Aaron is with us in Madison. Aaron, hi.
Hi. So I'm Aaron. I'm from Wausau, but I am a current college student down in the Madison area. And I guess my question or concern relates to declaring Wausau a community for all. So what exactly does that entitle? Is this just I don't want to say like a PR stunt, but it just, to me, seems like a title. It's not going to change any of the bigoted views, I think, of the people who hold on to these ideas. For example, in the New York Times article with the supervisor, Arnold Schley, had some pretty nasty comments, or I guess uneducated comments about minorities in our area. So what does declaring Wausau a community for all actually do?
Aaron, thanks for the call. Supervisor Zhang?
Thank you. So although we can't control, and a government can't control the thoughts and the feelings of certain individual, it definitely can ease and also reassure and reconfirm its commitment to its the well-being of its of all of its residents. Resolutions like these has been recommended by multiple organizations such as the United States Department of Justice in their Community Relations Services Department. They've all made recommendations that in order for you to continue progressing forward, making sure that individuals are, feeling comfortable welcoming this community here. Statements like these can do so much. I mean, even with the rise in AAPI and the violence against Asian Americans all across the country here in the last year here, we saw that with resolutions or statements released from local municipalities, elected officials, sheriff's department, police departments has a huge effect, and it definitely has a great deterrence in stopping other individuals from acting upon those hate-motivated ideologies, feelings towards a minority group. So these resolutions are meant to reconfirm and reconfirm and also validate the existence and the welcoming of individuals from minority communities or marginalized community members.
Thanks for that call. And Mayor Rosenberg, in our last minute or so, I know in Wausau there are efforts to build bridges, bring together people from across the political spectrum. I've actually hosted a couple of these events myself. Do you want to share that side of Wausau where you see people from different backgrounds actually trying to work together, even if they know they're not going to ultimately change each other's minds on everything?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we do here. We have to show up with each other, talk to each other, and get through this. And I guess, you know what, I want to just address the caller who said that a proclamation or a resolution isn't enough, and she's exactly right. I'm preparing a presentation for my city council tomorrow saying exactly that. Like, we can go ahead and say that we support all of this, but what we need to do is inject these principles into our strategic approach to our city policies. We need to think about it every day, and we need to empower those to continue pushing out those values. So it's not enough. It's a beginning. It's a conversation starter.
We'll leave it there. Mayor Rosenberg, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Supervisor Zhang, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Katie Rosenberg is the mayor of Wausau. Yi Lang Zhang is a member of the county board in Marathon County and director of the Hmong American Center. They talked with us about the diversity resolution, the community for all resolution that was rejected by a committee of the county board earlier this month. Following that, the mayor issued her own declaration calling the city of Wausau a community for all. Coming up after the news, could you use some help building or maybe rebuilding friendships? We'll get some useful and inspirational advice from the author of the new book, Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, An Optimist Guide to Connection. I'm Rob Verrett. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, online streaming services have changed the way many of us listen to music, but what has it meant for the musicians and their ability to make a living making music? Kate Archer-Kent and her guests look at the world of Spotify and how it changed the music business tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, building and maintaining friendships can be tough to do in normal times, but add a global pandemic to the mix and it can get even more difficult. That sounds like a familiar situation to you. Our next guest says you're not alone. He's got advice for how to have better, more meaningful friendships and ideas on how you can be a better friend to others. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do your close friends mean to you? What are some of the challenges you run into with keeping friendships, maintaining them? How has the pandemic changed friendships for you, if at all? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Adam Smiley Pozwalski is a millennial workplace expert and author. His latest book is called Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, An Optimist Guide to Connection. Smiley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. It's great to be here.
Smiley, it's clear. I mean, your name is Smiley. You have lots of friends that you talk about in your book, but you say even you sometimes deal with loneliness and difficulty maintaining those friendships yourself. Can you talk about that a little?
Sure. So one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, I actually started writing it long before COVID in 2017. And I wanted to write to talk about the fact that sometimes extroverted people like myself, my nickname is Smiley. I'm a social person. I actually usually make a living by going around the world and speaking, obviously something I couldn't do during the pandemic. But even people that have lots of social connections sometimes experience loneliness. In fact, nearly two-thirds of Americans, including 70% of millennials and 80% of Gen Zers, are lonely. And that is data that is from before COVID-19. So that is actually from 2019, before we spent over a year socially isolating and in many cases in lockdown or quarantine. And I wanted to write about the fact and call attention to the fact that the science shows that social isolation is actually this, loneliness is, excuse me, social isolation is having few social connections, right? But loneliness involves the subjective perception of isolation. So Julianne Holt-Lundstedt says that it's the discrepancy between one's desired and actual level of social connection. So you can have lots of social connections like myself and still feel lonely, still feel that gap, still feel like something's missing. And I think a lot of people feel that, especially in the age of social media, when we have all of these followers on Twitter or Facebook friends or Instagram followers, we may be connecting on a daily basis, maybe even a regular basis every, hour or so, but we're not actually seeing our friends, or we don't have that deep connection that we're really yearning for. So that was one of the impetuses behind writing this book, to say, hey, if you feel this way, you're not alone. My name's Smiley. I'm out there traveling. I meet people for a living. I feel this way too. Let's talk about it more. Let's normalize the fact that, hey, we know the data shows that 60% of Americans are lonely. I don't think we talk about it that much. Let's talk about the fact that we only spend 4% of our time with friends. 4%. That's not enough. And meanwhile, we're spending 50 minutes a day on Facebook, 50 minutes a day on Instagram. For young people especially, this is really hard. And we saw during the pandemic how much our social connections matter. And I'm glad we're talking about it more. So I think one silver lining, I hope, from what is otherwise quite obviously a very miserable year on many fronts, we're talking more about the importance of having deep social connections in our life.
All right. Now, here's the thing. Maybe this is just me. You tell me if it's just me or not. When I was a kid, I'd go knock on a neighbor kid's door. When I was in my teens and 20s, I'd call somebody and say, hey, do you want to hang out? Now, as a grown up, like I don't want to, overstep my bounds. I don't want to interfere with somebody else's life. I don't know. There's like a reluctance for me, maybe other people, to spontaneously reach out to a friend. Am I the only one like that?
You're not the only one. In fact, the average American hasn't made a new friend in the last 5 years. So it's not just you, Rob. And I think, especially when we're kids, we're told, go make friends now. In fact, that's kind of the point of your existence as a kid. It's like, hey, it's recess. Go make a friend. Go play with someone. Go talk to someone. And, I think for many of us in college, we experienced that too. But once you get a little bit older, it becomes very difficult to do that. There's not actually a space where it's like, hey, everyone that's here is looking to make a new friend. And if you think about it for dating or going out, it's kind of, okay, there's apps for that. But it's a lot different for friendships and adult friendships. And especially as you move away from your friends or people have children and have families, it becomes a lot harder. So I think we need to be a little bit more intentional about our friendships as we get older. Friendships don't just happen. They require work. I have a chapter in my book that says, invest in friendship. And I know that might sound silly. Oh, you think you have to invest in friendship like you would your financial situation or your career, but you do. You actually have to put it at the center of your life. You kind of have to say, okay, I'm looking to make new friends. Or even if you have a couple connections, I'm going to create rituals to go deeper with the friends I already have. I'm actually going to put this on the calendar. I'm actually going to create a correspondence habit. I'm going to write more letters. I'm going to create a monthly potluck where I invite people over. Stuff like that, where we're actually kind of saying, hey, I need to think about this seriously, just like I do my work or other aspects of my life. Because otherwise, I think a lot of people get to a point in adulthood, whether it's in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, where they're like, they look around and they say, I don't have a lot of friends, or I haven't seen my friends in a long time. And we know that actually one of the biggest indicators of having a healthy and happy life is the quality of our social relationships. In fact, Harvard did a study that found that the healthiest people at the age of 80 were the people that had the healthiest relationships at the age of 50. So having people that care about you and that you care about is one of the strongest indicators of health and happiness. Yet sometimes we don't actually live like we're valuing that or we're actually investing in our friendships.
Talking to Adam Smiley Pozwalski. His new book is called Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, An Optimist's Guide to Connection. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to share your story about maybe a lifelong friend? How'd you meet? How'd you keep that friendship alive? Or a brand new friendship? How did you do it? How did you make a new friend, especially during COVID, or maybe it was just before COVID? I don't know. Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Smiley, you mentioned one of the pieces of practical advice you gave, a ritual. And ritual, as you define in the book, doesn't have to be something fancy. Talk about the kind of things you mean by setting up some kind of regular thing with a friend or friends.
Sure. So I actually profile a friend in my book named Sahar, and he has this philosophy that's always go on a second date, you know, and it's similar to in dating. You know, if you meet someone and assuming, you know, they're not really an awful person or someone that you think is going to hurt you or someone that you don't feel safe with or someone that you don't like talking to at all, invite them to hang out again, right? Because you always want to go deeper with someone. You always want to see if some magic's there. So he has this ritual where every time he meets someone interesting, he hands out a friendship card. So instead of a business card, he has a friendship card and it says, let's be friends. And it has his phone number and his email. So it puts the onus on the person he's meeting to reach out. And then every month he has a recurring potluck where he invites all the people that he's met in the previous month to the potluck. So it's really simple. It's not too much work for him. People are bringing something to share, something to drink, something to eat. And then he gets to invite all the people he's met in the previous month. He invites his other friends. So maybe those people get to meet interesting folks too. And it's a simple recurring ritual that keeps it, you know, as he gets older, he finds that it's hard to meet new people. It says, hey, come to my potluck, right? It's like always going on a second date, which actually, you know, there's a psychological principle known as the mere exposure effect. The more you spend time with someone, the more you see them, the more likely you are to actually like them and enjoy their company. So I think having that simple kind of ritual of a monthly potluck, that whether it's Sahar doing it or you're doing it, and frankly, it doesn't have to be a potluck if you don't like potlucks. It can be a book club. It can be a cooking class. It can be doing a creative project. It can be a Monday night activity club. I write about some friends of mine in Washington when we lived in Washington, D.C., who had a Monday night activity club. Monday nights, once a month, we just got together and did a different activity. And every time we hung out, it was a different activity that someone in the group decided that they wanted to lead. It could have been yoga ball, soccer, capture the flag, board games, Dungeons and Dragons, poetry night, dance party, whatever it was. It just was very simple, but it was always on the calendar, always something to look forward to. And that recurring ritual, I think, leads to creating those regular heartbeats of connection that are a little bit different than just meeting someone once at a bar, meeting someone once at a party or a wedding, right? It's something on the calendar that we get to look forward to, which I think is really, really important, especially now. We need more moments of optimism, more things to look forward to, more chances of connection, because it's been a really long year.
Yeah. Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Manny is with us in Madison. Manny, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about Manny?
Yeah, definitely. So one thing, you know, I mean, friendship is definitely important, you know, in help with loneliness and everything. But one thing I think most, you know, people out here in the West and, you know, in America are missing in their life is a connection to a creator, you know, to back to, you know, that one creator who created you, connection to him, you know. So I think Islam really emphasizes that, you know, and, it, you know, like talking about, he was talking about rituals and everything, you know, just, it has all these in there, you know, in Islam for you, you know, like they go and pray 5 times a day, you go meet people at the mosque, you know, you connect with the community. It emphasizes all of that. So I think that's what a lot of people are missing in their life is, you know, a connection to a creator.
Manny, thanks a lot for the call. And Smiley, you talk a little bit about this is one thing, a shared spiritual practice, a shared faith, or even the idea of a Sabbath together inspired by faith, even if you're not a member of a faith group. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. Thank you for that question, Manny, and bringing that up. I think spirituality is important, whether you consider yourself religious, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, atheist, whatever faith you belong to. I think having some sort of practice where you're coming together to appreciate life, to appreciate a higher power, to appreciate humanity, and expressing gratitude is really important. I talk about, I identify as Jewish. I talk about during the pandemic, creating a ritual that was a Zoom Shabbat for people to come together, most of whom who actually weren't Jewish, people of all faiths to come together on Friday night. For those that don't know, Shabbat is the Jewish Sabbath, Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, where people don't work or they don't turn on the lights and don't do a lot of work. I actually sometimes do work on Saturday, but I do consider it a time to reflect on the week that was and just to express gratitude. So all we did for that Zoom Shabbat, we got together on Zoom, we lit candles, and people said a prayer for people they were thinking about during COVID-19. So maybe people were saying prayers for an uncle who was sick, someone who had passed away, someone who was in the hospital, someone who was pregnant and nervous about going to the hospital during such a hard time, someone who had maybe just lost their job or someone that was moving. And we also said prayers for happy things, right? People that had just gotten a puppy or gotten a new job or written a book. So it was just this moment to come together at the end of the week and reflect and be together. Think that religion is really, when it's at its best, is bringing people together to celebrate life.
Thanks for that call, Manny. We're talking to Adam Smiley Pozwalski. His new book is Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, An Optimist's Guide to Connection. You could join in with your friendship story or question. If you need some advice, 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll take more of your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Adam Smiley Pozwalski about his new book, Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, An Optimist's Guide to Connection. You can join in with your friendship questions, experiences, stories at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Julie is with us in Appleton. Julie, hi.
Well, hello there. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share very excitedly that I love your topic and to highlight that my girlfriend, Michelle, and I have been friends for 55 years this fall. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? There are five of us that started kindergarten together. Michelle and I are two of the five. And we try to get together once a year to just get caught up with everyone. Now, last year we didn't get to because of COVID, but we're going to try again this year. But we've all been friends since we've been five. And so 55 years this fall, but Michelle and I are the closest of that group. So I just wanted to say thank you for letting me highlight my best friend and our time together.
I love it, Julie. Thanks a lot. And Smiley, I heard the intentionality that you were talking about earlier. They make sure to do at least that once a year get together. And that's why, part of why I'm imagining they're still friends after 55 years. What do you think?
Yeah, that ritual. You don't stay friends for 55 years without intention and effort and that investment. I mean, going on overnight adventures with friends. You know, I have a chapter in my book called go deep rather than wide. You know, I think oftentimes in our sometimes lonely world, we say, okay, we need more connections, more, more, more. Everything in life these days is about more. But maybe we actually have a few people and all we need to actually do is go deeper with them. So we might not need more connections. We maybe just need to do what Julie's doing, where we're going away, you know, once a year, or a couple times a year with a close group of friends and actually having that time where we lose track of time and cook together and play and go on hikes or a long drive or go on an adventure or see some place or something beautiful and just get to spend time with each other. And that's how we really sustain those relationships over the years.
Thanks for the call, Julie. Best to Michelle as well. Let's go now to Kayla in Milwaukee. Kayla, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to actually, my comment connects to a lot of what your guest was just saying about going deeper instead of wider. I was just thinking, like, in high school, the thing was, like, how many people can sign my yearbook? Like, how many friends can I say I have? And now, I really, as an adult, I really feel, like, quality versus quantity. I have, like, three really close friends, and that's, like, all I need. And that's what kind of keeps me sane in this very difficult time right now. I have one best friend, really best friend, and I think what really works for us, it's silly, but we have this ritual. We text each other every day.
Nice.
We haven't gone a day without texting in 3 years. And it's just like, even if it's a quick, like, how are you today? It's like that touchstone that I know that I always have, no matter what.
I love the ritual, Kayla. Thanks for that. But I want to go to Smiley. That reminds me, you say somewhere in the book something like emphasize breadth, or no, depth and not breadth. The quality friendships Kayla mentioned, not the how many people can I get to sign my yearbook kind of friendship.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that became pretty illuminating during the pandemic. We couldn't simply maintain relationships with all of our friends or all of our acquaintances, right? Just because of the reality of the world we were living in. We were going to have to choose who we really had time, energy, and actually logistically could just simply keep track of. And we maybe lost track with some of those people that were weak ties or people that we saw, you know, once a year or that we saw every now and then at the office or when we were in a specific city, we weren't traveling. But on the positive side, we maybe went deeper with a few people that we said, okay, this person is really important to me. This is someone that I really value in my life. I'm going to text them every night before I go to bed. Why I'm grateful for them or to have keep that text chain going. I actually had a Zoom call with my buddies, my closest five friends from college. We usually see each other, you know, prior to the pandemic, once a year, once every couple of years at a wedding, at a bachelor party, something like that. We actually started a Zoom call and we were doing it every Wednesday evening for a while there at the early stages of the pandemic, once a week, because we actually wanted to see each other and check in such a hard time. And a buddy of mine that was on that call was an emergency room doctor working in New York City at Mount Sinai Hospital and Elmhurst Hospital, two of the hospitals hardest hit in New York and in the country. And we wanted to check in and be around each other more. So I actually think that maybe a silver lining from this experience was figuring out who a few of those people, those one, two, three, four friends that, hey, we're really going to be there for each other. We're going to show up for each other.
Thanks a lot for that call. And just our last couple minutes, Smiley, how about rekindling that old friendship? There's a quote from your book that I felt kind of seen by. You say, avoid the out of touch guilt spiral where I feel so bad for not getting in touch with that person that I feel bad if I reach out to them at this point. How can we overcome that and rekindle those old friendships?
And I actually think this is a perfect time to be talking about this because it's been a long year. It's been a hard year for friendships. So I think we can just have acceptance. First and foremost, we can accept friendships ebb and flow. If you haven't talked to someone in a while, it's kind of like you get the COVID pass. It's almost like we're resetting. It's 2021. Hey, I know we haven't spoken in a while. How are you? No one is going to be feel bad that they're hearing from you. So I think the most important thing is reach out. You don't have to wait for someone to reach out to you. You can make that effort, whether it's a letter, a text, a phone call. Reach out. Let someone know you're thinking about them. Even if you haven't been in touch for a while, it doesn't matter. The important thing is that you're expressing your love, your gratitude, that you're thinking of them. And that's really all that matters. And I think now's the perfect time to do it because I think we're meeting people where they are. We know it's been hard for everyone. You kind of get a pass. you weren't on top of everything during the past year. Nobody was. It's okay.
And very briefly, just in our last 30 seconds, is there a hunger right now for more friendship, more connection, Smiley?
I believe so. I am an optimist, but I believe that if the last year has taught us anything, it's that the power of social relationships, the power of community. We saw what we missed when we're not able to go into school and into work. To see people on a regular basis, to have those spontaneous run-ins, and how much we miss just the simple act of being able to go to a restaurant with our friends or go see live music with our friends, and that friendships now matter now more than ever. So I hope that 2021 is a year where we can safely get to spend more time with our friends, our families, and reemerge from this experience much stronger together and looking out for each other, both friends and strangers in our communities, because that's very, very important. right now.
Thanks a lot for joining us today, Smiley. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. It's great to be here.
That's Adam Smiley Pizwalski. We've been talking about his new book, Friendship in the Age of Loneliness, An Optimist Guide to Connection. Share a shout out for a friend, old or new, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, one of the biggest shows in daytime TV is coming to an end. We'll look at the impact of Ellen and what daytime TV looks like now. That's tomorrow on Central Time. If you've been following the national news lately, you may have heard a lot about the cicadas. A big group of cicadas called Brood 10 is making an appearance right now in large areas of the Midwest and East for a once-in-a-17-year wake-up. So you might be asking, are we going to see them here in Wisconsin? Short answer, probably not. Before I get to the long answer, a fun fact. I learned this on the website of the UW-Madison Department of Entomology Insect Diagnostic Lab. These cicadas are only active once every 17 years because, in the current hypothesis, it's part of their survival strategy. They all wake up at once for breeding season in massive numbers, quote, by overwhelming predators with sheer numbers, they simply can't all be eaten. That was my strategy back when I was a producer here. If I pitch enough ideas, they can't reject them all. Except sometimes they could. Anyhow, Wisconsin is not in the Brood 10 cicada range. If you really want to see them, go to Indiana or Ohio. Or wait 3 years for the Brood 13 cicadas, which live in southern Wisconsin. Learn more on the Larry Miller Show archives May 19th with the Wisconsin bug guy PJ Leash. An answer to your other questions, yes, these cicadas can be cooked and eaten. No, a majority of Central Time producers would not eat them given the opportunity. Yes, I would give it a try. No, this won't be a Food Friday. At least not till 2024. Cicada news you can use. This is Central Time.